Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and you have very likely heard about the Ebola outbreak in West Africa that has killed nearly 700 people just since February in Sierra Leone, Liberia, and Guinea mostly. Borders have been closed. Large gatherings like soccer matches have been canceled. A man showing symptoms arrived in Nigeria by plane and has died. And perhaps most disturbing of all is how many health workers have been infected and have been killed by Ebola while trying to contain it. We're going to open up the phones for any of you with ties to West Africa, for one thing. 212-433-WNYC. What are you hearing from family and friends over there about anybody who's gotten the disease or prevention measures or whether there's too much panic? 212-433-9692. And as panic can be more contagious than actual diseases sometimes, we're going to spend some time now talking about Ebola and what level of hysteria is actually appropriate for this very tragic and very scary outbreak. With us now is a depanicalizer, Dr. Stephen Morse, epidemiologist at Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health. Dr. Morse, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. Glad to join you.
And many reports have framed this as the worst Ebola outbreak ever recorded, with a very high mortality rate. So can you tell us if those dire warnings are right as far as they go? Is it the worst ever?
It has had the largest number of cases and has been probably the longest in terms of records, at least, that we know of. But it's also in an area that hasn't experienced Ebola outbreaks before, so they're still on a learning curve with how to deal with it.
And we should probably, for most of our listeners, do some Ebola virus 101. It's called Ebola hemorrhagic fever, in more fullness of title. What does that actually mean, and what does it do to the body, and is it often fatal?
It is often fatal, although with intensive supportive care, it is possible to bring the mortality rate down. Médecins Sans Frontières has been doing a lot of that, but it's still at least 50% and untreated probably about 90% fatal. It starts out as a flu-like illness like everything else, with fever and general feeling of being very tired, and then after that, really all the organs are involved. You see abdominal pain, very often bloody diarrhea. Sometimes you see bleeding from orifices. You certainly do in the movies, although that actually happens only less than half the time. But bloody diarrhea is quite common, and abnormalities in blood coagulation. So you have internal bleeding, leakiness of blood vessels, and eventually the patient, if not intensively treated and not otherwise lucky, dies of multi-organ failure or essentially shock.
Sounds horrible. But you said the way things happen in the movies, are there Hollywood Ebola flicks that I don't know about?
Well, you know, there are all these films like Outbreak, which is not officially Ebola, but, you know, is very much like it, and more recently Contagion, which is more scientifically accurate, but that's not based on Ebola. But, you know, still the patients die a rather ghastly and very cinematic death.
So how does it spread?
It spreads really only by close contact with infected secretions or organs, other tissues of infected patients. So it really doesn't spread, for example, by casual contact, by the respiratory route. It's not like the flu or even the SARS we had a few years ago. So controlling it really requires taking careful precautions, hygienic and infection control precautions, to prevent people who are coming in contact with infected individuals from also coming in contact with blood, saliva, or internal organs.
And again, listeners, anyone from the affected countries in West Africa, Sierra Leone, Liberia, Guinea, or anyone else from that region, Nigeria too, with somebody now arriving by plane with the virus who has died, 212-433 WNYC. Tell us what you're hearing from back home, or if that's not your home, if you have ties there and hearing in any way. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 for Dr. Morse from Columbia University. Here is Mamadou in Manhattan. Mamadou, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. Good morning, Brian. How you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Yeah, my name is Mamadou Barry. I'm from Guinea, West Africa.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought this virus has been there for a long time. You know, our government is not even telling the people what's going on in the country. Anytime we call our family member to tell them what's going on, they say they don't even hear about it. Nobody knows what's going on. The first couple of months when the virus came in the country, the government tried to blame the Medicines and Frontier who went to help the people in the country. Say, oh, they just went to raise money. They know is nothing happening on in the country. Nobody know how many people die in Guinea anyway, because I was culture when somebody die, even in 5 o'clock p.m., they have to bury the person before 8 o'clock p.m. So to be honest with you, they're not doing anything to let the people know what's going on in the country. Everything they're hiding, you know, nobody knows what's going on.
Mamadou, thank you very much. Dr. Morse, do you follow government communication policy with respect to Ebola?
Yes, and comment, I think, is a very apt one. Many governments, when they first see a major outbreak, you know, obviously are not quite sure how to communicate about it. Sometimes we've seen this with SARS. We've seen it in other situations in the past. You know, very often they won't talk about it for a while. So we think that, for example, this was officially announced in April, but it was probably going on in Guinea for several months before that, because there were already by then several hundred cases described. So it's not unusual, unfortunately, for governments to have to learn about how to communicate this appropriately.
So would politics there actually be contributing to the problem? If what she said is true, and tell me if you know it to be true, they actually started to blame it, the government did, on the group Doctors Without Borders, Médecins Sans Frontières, to say that this was a plot by them to raise more money for their nonprofit organization. I mean, is that happening? And is good government communication helpful to keep the death rate down and the virus from spreading?
I think good government communication is essential. Education of the public is essential. The caller mentioned traditional burial practices, and that's one of the ways in which family members often get infected. So they should, you know, obviously be careful to wear gloves or if they can get masks and take other precautions when they're preparing bodies for burial. This can be done, you know, with a normal cultural practices, but obviously with care as well. The government really needs to educate both the public and the medical community about the appropriate precautions to take. And unfortunately, because this is such a devastating disease and obviously causes so much obvious pain and suffering, people often do think, you know, that perhaps it's due to unnatural causes, witchcraft, there are many other things, or that the doctors who are really following the epidemic, you know, they're not there causing it, but they're following it, trying to help people. That's sometimes misunderstood, and that's really a need for education. It's unfortunate because the healthcare workers really are in the front lines and putting themselves at risk. As you know, several have already died from it.
Isaac in Randallstown, Maryland. You're on WNYC. Thank you for calling in.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. I'm a regular listener of your program. I'm from that area, western part of Liberia, Foya District. My organization is called Diompilor, Diompillor. We have been raising funds. We just send funding to the Sierra Leone and Liberia and Guinea. I'm calling in for you to help us promote this devastation that our folks are going through.
What do people need?
We need the American support.
What do they need?
Well, generally, the people need medical supplies, they need food, they need fund, whatever the public can help to help the country. I think the government, this Ebola is really the government doesn't have a lot of resources to help the folks.
Isaac, thank you very much. So what can, Dr. Morris, the United States do to help West African nations contain this outbreak? We hear the caller, Isaac, originally from Liberia, asking for U.S. help.
Well, certainly personnel, you know, people who can help with the outbreak, whether epidemiology or direct medical care, you know, and of course, people who are unfamiliar with working these outbreaks really need very careful training in infection control procedures, personal protective equipment for, you know, as Isaac mentioned, the medical equipment, personal protective equipment, both for those in populations at risk and the civilian population, such as gloves and masks, and of course the similar equipment for use in the hospitals, and of course education, being able to educate the public, materials and people to educate the public, as well as to make sure that healthcare workers are well trained, know how to treat this and how to protect themselves. So right now the personnel are spread very thin. CDC, for example, has I think about a dozen people over in the area.
Lee in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Lee.
Hi, good morning. I'm actually a physician. I am not an epidemiologist or an infectious disease physician, but I'm an anesthesiologist with a lot of ICU experience, and I'd like to echo and agree with Isaac's comments. It is imperative that we support as much as we can efforts to control this in West Africa. Should an inadvertent patient come on one plane into a place like Manhattan, it would completely overwhelm our capabilities, certainly in an ICU setting, and it would be a public health nightmare. I think we've been very lucky. These, without sounding insensitive, these outbreaks have burnt themselves out. Patients have gotten sick and died. But this one seems to be bigger than all the other ones that I've read about and been following in the past.
Are you saying, Lee, that New York's ICU system, intensive care unit system, America's, would be overwhelmed if a few people wound up here with Ebola?
If it spread, the answer is yes. I think it would be very, very daunting.
So if anything, Dr. Morris, that spreads fast enough, that's seriously enough, that is serious enough, you know, that anything like that could be daunting in that way. But I have read that the CDC, Centers for Disease Control, said this week that there is no significant risk of an Ebola outbreak in the U.S. And here's a headline from National Geographic: why deadly Ebola virus is likely to hit the U.S. but not spread. So start to unpack some of that. Here's Lee, a doctor, he says, working in an intensive care unit with a high degree of fear, and the Centers for Disease Control, not so much.
And, of course, intensivists, people who are experts in intensive care, are very much needed in this situation and obviously have to be very careful to take all the precautions and wear all the personal protective equipment and make sure they are well trained in using it. But they're really needed there. I think it's quite likely that sooner or later someone will get on a plane, whether it's an American volunteer or someone else visiting from Africa, will get on a plane and come here. And in the process, you know, get sick either when they land or while they're on the plane. This has happened with other diseases. I think that containing it really depends on being able to recognize it quickly, to get the patient into isolation and with all the appropriate precautions for infection control. If that's done rigorously, it really shouldn't cause an outbreak. There shouldn't be other patients because it's not spread that easily. But within a hospital setting, if infection control isn't really rigorous, then obviously there could be spread within the hospital. In the initial Ebola outbreaks in 1976, many of the patients were people who were just in the hospital but were infected by contaminated needles because there just weren't enough of them in the hospital. I don't think that's likely here. So with good infection control, I think it would not cause a larger outbreak.
Alex in Princeton, you're on WNYC. Hi, Alex. Alex, how are you there?
I've been a regular and first-time caller. And, Brent, my taking to this Ebola virus, I'm from Sierra Leone originally and American now, and I've been here for many years now, I can't tell you. But anyway, my taking to this Ebola thing is that the three Manoliva Union countries did not do a good job in containing it. I mean, this is a disease that could be contained. I mean, they allow it to spread from one nation to another nation. Now, look at the disaster. Secondly, it's that these capitals where these diseases are dense populated, and it's something like in Sierra Leone, Freetown was built for free slaves, and it was only 150,000 people in the 60s after colonization. Today, Freetown is about 3 million people. Can you imagine the catastrophe this will cause to the people of Freetown? Up to today, scientists in America, since they last discovered the tetracycline and penicillin, they have not done nothing to bring new cures to diseases. Look at AIDS. Up to today, we've not got an answer to AIDS. How are we going to talk about Ebola now? Next year, we could contain it this year. What about next year? What about the other year? What about the other year?
I hear you, Alex.
Don't even know about this.
Alex, one other thing. Alex, did you tell my screener that you personally now feel you can't go to visit?
No, I'm scared to go back there. How can I go there and my family and people that I know, everybody's scared to go back to visit.
So, and Alex, thank you for your call. You raised so many interesting and important points there. But Dr. Morse, if I presented you at the beginning of the segment as a depanicalizer, do you want to tell Alex that he should not be too afraid to go home, or don't you want to be too directive?
If there are no cases in your family or in your immediate neighborhood, then the risk is really very low. And for casual travelers, it's even lower. As long as you hopefully stay out of the hospital, don't go looking for Ebola. But if your family is well and there aren't cases nearby, even if there are cases nearby, obviously take precautions and make sure that you stay away from people who do have Ebola or families where there is Ebola, at least until everyone is well or they're in the hospital. But if your family is well, there's really, I think, no reason to worry.
Though we should say, not to whitewash anything, that an American doctor, Kent Brantley, who is working with Samaritan's Purse, that group treating Ebola patients in Liberia, Dr. Brantley is in grave condition, and he says he took all the precautions against transmission and doesn't know how he was infected. I mean, that sounds terrifying. What does it mean?
That does happen. I mean, these people are working long hours. Many of them are not used to all the precautions, and they're, learning it as they go along. And, of course, with long hours, they may be tired and make mistakes.
But also we should point out, I think, that he is a doctor working with patients with Ebola. So that's different than a person who may just be going home to visit family if there's no known disease in the house. But Dr. Brantley is an example of the last thing that we'll have time for that I think it's really important to get out here, which is that this outbreak has been especially deadly for healthcare workers, and it hasn't been quite so in the past, correct?
Well, healthcare workers are always in the front line, and you could think of them as heroes. They're always at very great risk. We think of the SARS outbreak a few years ago, and many of the cases were in healthcare workers, and now with the Middle East respiratory syndrome and with Ebola. So, simply because they're going to be the closest to the patients. So we always do see risk to healthcare workers. I think one of the reasons now is that because this is so large, there are many people, some of whom are very experienced, but are also working very long hours and obviously very tired and working very quickly. Others who may be less experienced, and any small mistake in or slip up in infection control or personal protective equipment, the way you put it on, the way you take it off, obviously can have very grave consequences. So it's a case for education at all levels.
So on the scale from people stop panicking, you're overreacting, to be afraid, be very afraid, where are you?
I'd put it closer to a one or a two. This is not something, if you're there, if you're a healthcare worker, if it's in your family, be very careful and learn how to deal with it. Otherwise, if you're there casually, if you're on a plane, if you're here in the city, I don't think there's much reason to be very afraid at all. In fact, it's very unlikely that you're going to get it.
An epidemiologist is one who studies the spread of diseases. We have been lucky to have Dr. Stephen Morse, epidemiologist at Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health. Thank you very much for talking about the Ebola virus with us.
You're welcome.